Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Hello, everybody. Karen Conti here on this happy Groundhog Day. No one's talking about it. Groundhog didn't see his shadow. Whatever it did, we're going to have a very early spring, according to that woodchuck. And early spring in Chicago, as you know, means June 1st. It will be nice. So I'm looking forward to that. And thank you for joining me. I know all three of you who are listening will enjoy the show tonight. You know what? Who needs the Super Bowl? We have so much going on here. We have riveting conversation. We have tackling legal issues. We're running down the legal news of the week. We're talking to all kinds of important people. And the most incredible thing that's going to happen is Roger Badish is going to perform at halftime on my show. So at 8 o'clock, which is the mid part of my show, there is going to be a Roger Badish halftime show. He does not know it yet. I think he's a little worried. I don't hear anything from the newsroom at all. But he is going to be very entertaining, as he usually is. We do have a great show tonight. We're going to be talking at 7:30 to an astrologer. Now, do you believe in astrology? Is it based in science? My birthday is tomorrow, and I was thinking, and I always read my horoscope just for fun. I used to study the astrology just a little bit, and I'm wondering, does it matter where our planets are aligned and the stars and the moon and Jupiter? Are those things that really cause trends in society? Are those things changing? Do they change your personality if you're born under certain signs? I know out there probably some people believe in this stuff, and probably a lot of people don't. But let's listen to what the premier astrologer in Chicago is going to say about what astrology means and how you can use it to maybe make your life a little bit better and understand some of the trends that might be going on. That's at 7:30. At 8 o'clock, we are taking your legal questions. As you know, I'm a practicing lawyer. And if you have any questions at all about anything, you will give me a call here at 981-7200, 312-981-7200, or text to that number. I will see if I can answer your legal questions and maybe in the process help out some other people who have the same question. I also will be doing my little quiz at the end just before 9 o'clock, and it will be kind of a rundown of the week's news stories, and we'll see how much you've paid attention to the news stories. I promise we're not talking politics or impeachment or viruses, so we're going to stay in some topics that are a little bit more lighthearted, if you will. But let's get going with our first topic, which is something that I've been thinking about all week. As you recall, last Sunday, Kobe Bryant died tragically in a plane crash. The great basketball player, his daughter died, as did several other people in this helicopter crash. And what was interesting, I mean, you saw in the Super Bowl today, there was a memorial. They were having memorials at all different games. And you saw people just with an outpouring of sympathy, and they were crying and there were tears. And I wonder, why is it that we as people in a society mourn with such great feeling the loss of a celebrity? What is it about us? We don't know this guy. We've watched him. Maybe we think we know him. Maybe we've rooted for him, or maybe we admire him. But what is it about his tragic death truly goes right to the heart of our emotions? And with us to talk about that fascinating topic is Dr. Patty Ashley. Dr. Ashley is an international workshop presenter, an author, and a speaker. She's a psychotherapist who's going to give us some insight into the identification of why we feel so strongly about these issues. Dr. Ashley, thank you so much for joining me. How are you tonight?
Oh, hi, Karen. I'm great. How are you? Thanks.
Good.
So much for having me.
Good to have you here. So let's just talk a little bit. We're going to go to a break in just a little bit, but I want to get just your insight instinctively. Is this an uncommon thing to see people getting emotional about the death of a celebrity? And if it isn't, why do we do it?
No, it's really common. It's archetypal. We feel something in our bones that triggers us. It feels like it's something we know, but we really don't know. Our hearts open. There's empathy, you know, and we really want to make sense out of something that doesn't make sense, especially a tragic sudden loss like we saw with Kobe Bryant.
Are there certain celebrities that seem to evoke that kind of feeling more than others?
I think so. You know, and I think it really depends on the person because everybody has a certain character that they're drawn to. Princess Diana, for instance, she, you know, that morning went on forever, the flowers and the letters and the, and she did so much work, you know, in the world, but it was also such a royal family kind of situation that just stirred up big questions in our lives. And so I think it really depends on, you know, the individual, how much they're going to be touched by the person who dies. Like for me, my favorite singer-songwriter was Dan Fogelberg.
Oh.
I mourned that for a long time.
Yeah. Well, and he's actually from Illinois. I forgot what town. It's not Peoria, is it?
Yeah.
Or it's somewhere downstate. And he died so tragically young of a prostate cancer, I believe. And I don't know about you, but when I hear his songs, which are so beautiful, I can't help but feel sad because his life was cut so very short, and I would have loved to hear him now, you know, in his older years doing other ballads and other songs.
Right. And so that's a personal connection for you, the music, as it is for me. So I'm going to mourn that a little bit more. So a big sports fan, for instance, with Kobe Bryant, you know, when their whole world is around sports and what that's about and they get excited and then, you know, something tragic like that happens, I think they probably have a similar feeling like, whoa, I wanted to know what else he was going to do in his life. And it was so sudden. It could happen to me.
Right, right. Let's open the phone lines. If anybody has felt something like this, where you just you obviously don't know the person, you've heard about it in the news, is there somebody who's really kind of just tugged at your heart, a death that you kind of surprised yourself? When we come back, I am going to talk a little bit about someone who kind of touched me, and I still look back and think, how was it that I felt so strongly about the death of somebody who I didn't know? 981-7200, 312-987-200. And we're talking with Dr. Patty Ashley, and we're talking about grief, too. We're going to get to morph into another topic, which is very important to talk about, and which is dealing with grief, dealing with the loss of loved ones, and how maybe some tips to make you feel a little bit better. You're listening to WGN. This is the Karen Conti Show. We are talking about the loss of a celebrity and in light of the death of Kobe Bryant last Sunday. And with us is Dr. Patty Ashley, who is a psychotherapist who deals with all kinds of issues regarding wellness and grief. And she's written books, and she's here to weigh in a little bit on this topic. Are you still with us, Dr. Ashley?
I am.
Okay. Well, I had a texter who said Tom Petty. He said she's apparently Tom Petty, and it confused me why I felt this way. And I said, can you guess why? And the texter said, I don't know. I guess it's part of my life. I mean, it's almost inexplicable. Is it different if somebody dies, if it's a celebrity dies of old age versus some kind of sudden death? Do you see a difference in how people react?
I think there's a slight difference, but there's still a sadness. There's still a grief. I would ask the texter about, you know, how he is like Tom Petty himself, you know, what qualities in Tom Petty are in him. And then, you know, then we grieve the loss of almost a part of ourselves in that respect.
So that might be part of it. So I'm going to share John F. Kennedy Jr. I met John F. Kennedy Jr. for a brief nanosecond at a party in Chicago at the Art Institute. He was walking across. It was to celebrate his magazine, George. I was at the party. He walked right in front of me. He shook his hand, shook my hand, and said, I'm John Kennedy. And I'm like, yeah. And it wasn't much longer after that he died tragically and also in a plane crash. And I took it so hard. Now, I did have that brief moment that I met him, but I'm trying to figure it out. And I thought to myself, he was such a young, beautiful, vibrant man, and he would have been so much fun to watch. You know, he had political aspirations. Maybe he was enjoying his life. You saw him with his shirt off, you know, running around Central Park. He had gotten married. It was just something where I felt like I was robbed of the experience of watching him grow up. Is there anything else that you could add to that, Dr. Ashley, that would make any sense as to why perhaps his death affected me that way?
Well, if it were me, I would ask myself again, what part of him is in me? What is it in me that I don't want to let go of? I want to continue on. What did I see in this person that I really admire? And that's a part of you. And the good news is those of us that are left can be the legacy. You know, we can, you know, be what it is in the world that these people we look up to stood for, because when they're gone, they're no longer here. And it's hard to watch, especially, you know, when they're young, watch someone like that have to leave us.
Right. And it's almost as if they're frozen in time. They're never going to age. Mm-hmm. You know, we're never going to see him old. And, you know, you think of the Marilyn Monroes and all of those people. No, we never saw them go into their older years. And in some way, there's a preservation of their image as, you know, kind of in the prime of their lives, if you will. Let's talk a little bit. Let's move topics just a little bit when it comes to grief. You have spoken about post-traumatic stress reactions to mass shootings. Can you tell our listeners how you believe all of these shootings we're having? I mean, there was terrorist activity in London today with some stabbings, but I mean, these mass shootings that we've had all over our country almost on a weekly basis, how does this affect us?
Wow. Yeah, it's so important for us not to become numb to this, and that's what breaks my heart the most, I think, is, you know, we feel so helpless, right? And we go, I can't do anything about it, and there's another one. And we almost kind of numb out our grief somewhat, but grief deepens us. And so, I mean, it's tragic. It is horrendous what's happening, you know, with the amount of people that are getting killed in these mass shootings and that sort of thing. So whatever we can do, you know, I love Mr. Rogers saying, you know, look for the helpers. Whatever we can do to help, whatever we can do, that brings the compassion. It doesn't bring it, you know, it brings it more to the forefront, the compassion for each other. And I think we all have to come together in these times and support one another. And it's tragic because the amount of lives that are affected with those kinds of losses and just so seemingly unfair.
And you know, there's, you know, maybe some high point to it in that we all are in this together and we feel it because we're all mourning a similar loss. And so maybe there's some togetherness here that is good for us. But it just seems to be so far outweighed by the fear and the distrust and mistrust of people. And I guess as an adult, you know, dealing with that is not easy, but it's certainly easier than when you're a child. And I don't know, can you weigh in a little bit? I have this feeling that with all the school shootings that have been going on for now 30 years or so, 25, 30 years, again, a commonplace thing, so commonplace that schools have real life kind of drills with gunshots going off and real blood, mm-hmm. you know, like fake blood being thrown. And how does this affect children on a long-term basis, or do we not know this?
Well, it's trauma. It's PTSD, the fake drills, the fear of going to school because, you know, I work with adolescents, and they talk to me about that. You know, we have to, you know, they think about, you know, am I going to hide under the desk? What am I going to do? That is not the way children should be spending their day. That is not healthy development. And Karen, that's why I do what I do, because I feel like we don't address really the prevention issues. We're trying to fix problems all the time. We're slapping Band-Aids on things, right? And we're not really looking at what's in the deeper heart of our children. And what's in the heart of our children is it's an unbelievable disconnect. You know, we have so much to learn about what children need because we've just researched it in the last century, right? And we have so much to fix and undo and change, but there's so much of the old tapes in our unconscious, in our DNA, you know, do as I say, not as I say, stop being crying before I give you something to cry about. You should be ashamed of yourself. Don't be angry, la, la, la. And kids don't know how to deal with emotions, and adults don't either. So we need to have bigger conversations about what these kids are feeling, because, you know, they got to be pretty angry to be shooting people in the streets and in the schools, don't you think?
Absolutely. You know, and it's not just one of them.
Right.
We're here with Dr. Patty Ashley, who's a psychotherapist, and we're talking about death, and we're talking about how certain public executions, certain crimes are affecting people. And I do some family law work, Dr. Ashley, and I do hear my clients talk about their children who are afraid to go to school and who are so anxious that they literally can't go to school and they're medicated. And what, you know, first of all, what advice would you give to the schools? Should they be doing these school drills? Is this something that makes sense? I mean, maybe if it happens, it would help to save a few people. But is there some better way to handle this than real life drills?
Well, I was a special education teacher once, and my daughter's a school psychologist, and my other daughter is a high school teacher. And I have to say, the bigger problem is systemic. We need at least twice as many teachers in the school, first of all, so that kids feel connected. And that's not going to happen right now anytime soon. But that, to me, is a piece of the bigger problem. And then we need to have conversations. We need to have these kids get together and talk about what's going on and what they're feeling more frequently than they do. I know the psychologists, like my daughter, is one of them, you know, goes in a crisis and does, you know, occasional groups. But we need so much more of the social emotional work in schools and with parents. And parents need to be educated. I did parent education for years for a pediatric group in Virginia, and there was shame around taking a parent education class, you know, when it's the most important job we can do, and we have so much to learn about what we know about how kids develop. I think those are the conversations that we're not having.
And we can't juxtapose our experiences. You know, I'm saying at my age, you know, we didn't have any of that stuff. I mean, we had a fire drill, or we had, you know, a tornado drill, and it was fun, and no one was worried about it, and it was just a way to get out of school for about 10 minutes. But, you know, with these kind of shootings, this is a whole different thing. This is a whole we can't say, well, just get over it or don't think about it. We do have to address it and make sure that the kids understand that this is real and that there's somebody listening to them and hearing what they're saying. Totally agree with you. Just a few minutes here left, and I know I have a lot of older listeners here, Dr. Ashley, who are mourning the loss of a spouse, of a friend, of parents. We all have lost somebody. Hardly any of us has not been through that. I know that everyone grieves in different ways, but what are some of the bullet points in how to help and how to move through it? Because you can't, you know, move away from it. You got to kind of just move through it. What are some of the things that you recommend in your therapy to people who are grieving?
Well, one of the key pieces I learned early on in my graduate work is you have to tell the story at least 100 times. And I think anyone who has an enlightened witness, someone who can sit with them and feel the grief with them, that's a true gift. So grief groups, therapists, any sort of supportive people you can talk to tell the story. I wrote my book, Letters to Freedom, after my partner died suddenly of a heart attack, the same way my father had died when I was a kid.
Oh, goodness.
And I had to sit down after he died and write stories on the computer because I just couldn't get what had happened between us in our relationship and the sudden death out of my mind, and I didn't want to burden my friends too terribly much, even though they were sweet and wonderful and did listen. But I was really fortunate to have learned you got to tell the story 100 times. So that, you know, tell a story, give sorrow words, as William Shakespeare said.
And that's good advice to people who are helping others grieve. And interestingly, I lost my husband, and it was this month. Mm. And I also, today would be my wedding anniversary. And it was interesting because I had several friends reach out and just say, just thinking about you. They didn't even mention it. But the idea that they recognized that it might be a day that had a little sadness for me was so overwhelming. I mean, I just sat on my computer this morning and thought, they have it on their schedule to reach out and say something nice just because they. And I think that people don't always do that. They feel uncomfortable, but they should just do it, right?
Yes, and first, let me say I'm so sorry for your loss. That's hard to walk through. Yes, and what a gift to have people connect with you. That's what we need. That's exactly what we need.
Dr. Ashley, I want to thank you, and I'm going to give out your contact information next half hour because we've got to run. But I want to thank you so much for joining us. Please join us again, and have a great Valentine's Day.
Oh, thank you, Karen, for having me.
All right. Dr. Patty Ashley, right. Thank you for joining me. We're going to take a break and we'll come back and we're going to be talking about astrology into the 7:30 half hour. We're having a great Super Bowl, an un-Super Bowl program tonight. And, you know, today is 02022020. Is that palindrome? Is that what you call a palindrome? Like radar is spelled backwards the same way? Is that right? 0202-2020. Yes. That's, I think it was like 900 years ago that we had one of those. Anyway, happy Groundhog Day, and the groundhog is giving us some good news. We're going to have early spring, and here we are. At 8 o'clock, we're going to be taking legal questions at 312-981-7200 or text to that number, and hopefully you'll get around to all of your calls tonight. But what I want to talk about now is astrology. Now, I don't know what you think about astrology. I used to study it. I think it's very interesting. And so many people over so many years have used it to help guide some of their decisions. And here with us tonight to talk about this is one of the premier astrologers in the Chicago area, Dr. Dawn Silver. She's a naturopath, an astrologer, herbalist, and aromatherapist. She counsels and lectures internationally on these types of issues. And for years, she and her husband operated Healing Earth Resources, a metaphysical bookstore in Chicago. Welcome to the show, Dr. Silver. How are you?
Thank you, Karen. Thanks for having me on.
I know you're busy. You're working hard on a seminar you're going to give, but I'm glad you got to join us tonight. Now, tomorrow's my birthday, so I'm going to go to the newspaper and I'm going to read if today is your birthday. And how accurate is that going to be?
Well, I mean, there are 12 signs, so it's hard to be perfectly accurate. They're just talking to your sun sign. On the other hand, I just want to say, in the old days, we had Sidney Omar,
yes,
and that was how
right.
I got into astrology, because I had somebody who was trying to kind of shove the wrong things down my throat, and I was watching Sidney Omar, and he was saying things like, and I was 17, and he was saying, you and your friends are going to be interested in purchasing a house, just wait a couple weeks, and you're going to change your mind, and that was exactly what happened. I was like, how could he know this? But I'm a Virgo with a Virgo rising and a Gemini moon, which is all ruled by Mercury. So when they write in the paper, they write for somebody who is likely to have a preponderance of that sign.
I see. So,
it's you're an Aquarius.
Yeah.
And boy, there's big changes for Aquarius these days. And you know this because you've been going through them.
Yes, exactly. Well, let's just start at the beginning. What does it mean to be, what is astrology? What is the actual definition of astrology?
Well, I don't know that there's an actual definition. There's people have different ways of explaining it, but astrology is a roadmap to the psyche. It helps you to understand how you're wired. It's a symbolic language. And you could say it's the cosmic fingerprint by which we read God's thoughts. So astrology literally means logos, which is words, knowledge, and it's the logic of the universe. So logic in the sense that our movements are astrological. The Earth moves around the sun predictably. We have seasons somewhat predictably, at least before global warming and impending ice age, and all of these things. So astronomy gives names to the stars and the celestial objects, and astrology gives meaning to those things that have names. But what's so interesting about it is that the original astrologers were actually people like Copernicus, Galileo, Kepler. They were astrologers first who developed a lot of the laws of movements of the planets just so they can better interpret their calculations, so they could better interpret the astrology.
So this goes way back and is based on science. Would you agree with me?
It's absolutely. Well, I would say that would be somewhere around the 15, 1600s. I would say the not originally based on science, unless you incorporate things like ancient alien technology, of which I'm not well versed in, and most people aren't. So, but I would say it originates back to the Babylonian times, about 24,000 years ago. And so they're credited with the birth of astrology, and they were able to look up into the skies and to predict the reoccurrence of the seasons and certain celestial events like comets and things like that. And then the Babylonians introduced it to the Greeks in the 4th century, and through the study of Plato, Aristotle, and others, astrology came to be regarded as a science. So back in those days, it was highly regarded as a science and then embraced by the Romans and later the Arabs and spread throughout the entire world. And the early astrologers would use it to, you know, just basically agricultural purposes and weather patterns.
So let's talk a little bit about what you can glean from somebody's date of birth and time of birth. Usually you need both of those things. What can you glean from that, and how do you go about doing that?
Great. So in the early days, when I first started studying astrology, when I was 17, 18, 19, there were no computers. I'm in my mid-60s. There were no computers. Excuse me. And so I had to take classes on calculations, which were based on logarithmic movements, and they were based on the exact longitude and latitude lines. So you had to know the exact time of birth somebody was born, because believe it or not, the chart actually changes roughly every 4 minutes. Now, that's not always possible to know that about a person. I always joke and say, by the time the nurse had her coffee, donuts, and watched the Maury show, or the doctor fills in the date several days later. And that doesn't always happen. So I want to say I love nurses, big fan. But sometimes that is the case, and some cultures don't record time. Some cultures, I just recently did the chart for a woman who adopted a young girl from Ethiopia, and they didn't even have the right year. So I had to read the chart, read the daughter from her chart, which you can do. It's better to have it exact, but you got to work with what you've got to work with. So things like the moon are going to change signs every 2.5 days. So the rising sign every 4 minutes, and every day is a different day. And so the transiting planets, the planets that are in the heavens now, are going to affect each degree differently.
So what kind of things can you just generally speaking, without telling me, you know, the technical way you do it, but what types of things can you tell about a person based upon a quick reading? Let's just say you do have the accurate time of birth.
Okay. Well, the time of birth, you know, the rising sign is going to be based on the exact time of birth and the group of stars on the eastern horizon at the time that they took their first breath and said, hello, world. And that's going to be, so a chart is divided up into 12 different segments. There's 12 different houses, and each house represents a different portion of your environment. Like the first house is going to be you, your physical body, you know, and what you look like out there in the world. So if I knew somebody was, I don't know, pick any sign, go ahead.
Oh, say Aquarius.
Okay, if I knew somebody was an Aquarius rising, Aquarius is ruled by the planet Uranus, and Uranus is the rebel, they're going to be different. So you're always going to have two different types of Aquarius. The Aquarius that's 50 years ahead of the time and the 50 years up behind the time. But usually they're going to have an unusual look to them. And if I see Aquarius on the rising sign, you know, they can wear a burlap sack and make it look fashionable. They just look good. They usually have good hair. They usually have kind of like a clarity to their eyes, I have found. They tend to be thinner, but that's not really true because there are two types of Aquarius.
Interesting. So you can tell, and some, just generally, you can tell a little bit about maybe what someone looks like or their appearance. And can you tell about their personality? Can you tell about their...
Absolutely. So okay. The second house is going to represent how they make money. You know, their money situation. I can tell if they're going to be kind and generous, or if they can squeeze a nickel into a dime. I mean, you can tell those things. You can get an idea through the second house how they're going to make their money. The 10th house is going to be their actual career, but the second house is how they make their money. And this is really important in career counseling, because a lot of people, when they're young, go to their house of hobbies, what they like to do. You know, I may like music, I may like, you know, race car driving or whatever, but it might not be the best way for me to make my money in the world. It might just be a thing that I have to do to, you know, have some fun and let some steam off.
So when you counsel people, like someone would come to your office and you would, you know what their sign is, and you would talk to them, and they might ask you questions. They might say, Dr. Silver, you know, I'm having trouble with my love life. My husband and I are at odds. Mm-hmm. What kind of advice, and what kind of, I mean, this is not a way to predict the future It's right.
No,
it's a way to explain maybe what's going on. And so how do you counsel someone in a situation?
That's a great question, because everything's based on timing. I mean, you can go 20, 30 years and not have that kind of an issue come up. But before they even come to the office, I've already done the work. I usually work on a chart for a couple hours before someone comes, and I can already see if they're having marital issues. And then you look at the chart and you see, do they have a divorce chart? You have to look at the chart to see what is what's called the natal promise. Are they going to be rich? Are they going to be lucky? Are they going to get divorced? Are they going to have kids? Those sorts of questions you can see in the astrology chart ahead of time. So you know if you have somebody who's definitely having marital problems, but they don't have a divorce chart, you just counsel them through that and say, you know, this is something that's going to go on maybe for a year and a half to 2 years in your chart. And perhaps what you really need is a little bit more space from each other so that you can develop your own interests, so that you can move through this pattern and give each other enough space to go through it. And if you can see that, so oftentimes you'll get people, they'll be married, and they'll meet somebody, and they'll be like, oh, my God, this is it. I have to get a divorce. I have to this. But if you could see in their chart that this is a temporary aspect in their chart, then this could be either what they needed in order to get out of the marriage, if that was necessary for their astrology chart, or you could say to them, hey, you know what, in a year and a half, you're going to look at this and you're going to be sorry you did this.
We're here with Dr. Dawn Silver. I'm going to have to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to be talking more about what's going on in society, given some of the things that are happening astrologically. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN. Yes, this is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. We're here talking about astrology with premier astrologist Dr. Dawn Silver. Dr. Silver is a naturopath and astrologer, herbalist, and aromatherapist. And I want to just, before we get into the conversation, Dr. Silver, you have an event coming up. Can you tell everyone about it? I think some people might be interested.
Oh, thank you. I have a couple events coming up, exciting ones. This weekend, I'm doing a 2.5-day retreat in Franklin Grove, Illinois, at the Lincoln Way Inn. And that's going to be, we're going to do readings there. Everybody gets readings from me and a tarot reader who's going to be there, Deb Frew, and we're also going to be doing lectures. So I'm going to do a 2-hour lecture on what's coming up for the United States, for the world, the big trends that are coming up, and how this relates to people personally.
So how
and then
would
the week,
you,
oh, a couple
oh,
weeks, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Couple weeks after that, I'm going to be doing a 3-hour class in Evanston, Illinois, at the Mystical Sciences Institute, and I'll be doing the same thing. And everyone who comes gets a personalized folder for what their year ahead looks like.
And why don't you give your contact information, either a website or an email address?
Okay, contact me at Dawn Silver, like the color, Dawn Silver at ameritech.net.
Thank you so much. So let's talk a little bit about, is there any danger in relying upon what someone tells you in this regard? You know, and when I say that, is there some idea that people could mistake what you're telling them with the lack of free will, and that they could just say, well, I don't really need to try or do anything because there's fate out there that's just going to basically tell me what's going to happen, and I don't have the ability to change it?
Well, I guess what I like to say, you know, there are people out there who don't have the credentials. We'll put it that way, and you can't tell somebody in absolute terms. I mean, if someone comes to me and they're having health problems, I can see it. And 90% of my readings are by phone, by the way. I can see that in their chart. You can see if someone's having health problems. So you're not going to name the disease or anything. You're going to say, hey, this is what's going on, and nutrition's my subject, so I'm going to give them some best suggestions on how to handle it. Or, geez, it could be anything. You know, if I see marriage coming up in the chart or anything. You can see these things in the astrology chart. So it's not a guessing game because you can see what the transits are, the aspects are, what the likelihoods are. But you don't speak really in absolutes because everybody does have free will. But Ram Dass just passed away, and he was a very famous mystic for our century. And he had a quote that I always like to relay, and it's, trust in Allah, but tie your camel up anyways. You know, we're one with the divine, all that there is. And so basically, it's got to come back to what makes sense for us. It's our path. It's our life. And the astrologer is just the counselor.
And I think, you know, I guess how I look at it is that, you know, it's always good to talk about issues. It's good to look at your life and look at the trends and look at what's going on. And, mm-hmm. you know, even if you walk out of there, maybe you don't have any concrete advice. It makes you kind of just be a little more introspective than I think we are. I mean, we're in a society where we're always on our phones. We're always working. We're always, you know, we never just stop and go, where are we going? And why are we with these people? And what should I be thinking? And am I really happy? Until maybe it's mm-hmm. too late, you know, and then your life mm-hmm. has kind of gone by. So I have always enjoyed these kinds of things because I take them, you know, I listen, but I'm not going to base necessarily what I do on them other than what makes sense to me. You know, so if you say something that's outrageous, like, you know, go be a doctor now, I'd say, well, I think that ship has sailed. But if you said something like, you know, watch your health in this regard, I probably would watch my health in that regard because we should all be watching our health. So
absolutely. But I want to say something. It was my astrologer when I was 20 who told me that I was going back to school and I didn't even know it. I had been traveling for years. And she looked at my chart and says, well, you're going back to school and you should be a naturopath. And I went and checked out what naturopathy was that night, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, my God, this is what I always wanted to do.
Oh, that's wild.
So, and what is a circle game. I always laugh and say, why didn't she tell me to become an astrologer? Well, she could tell by my astrology chart that nutritional astrology was going to be my specialty.
What is a naturopath?
So a naturopath is a connective tissue specialist that works on the muscles, ligaments, and tendons, and where they find any kind of scar tissue damage in the muscles, ligaments, and tendons, they're going to stretch them according to the specific direction of the fibers. By doing so, it takes the pressure off the nervous system, the vascular system, the lymphatic system. So it helps the body to function better, and it puts it back into balance. So it's a very physical treatment. It feels amazing. And Chicago's very lucky because we have a great college. The Chicago National College of Naturopathy is at 3330 North Milwaukee Avenue.
Okay, interesting. Now, let's go back to astrology, and then I'm going to skip to mm-hmm. some other things that you do in your practice. Can you give an example of a famous person that you know, you might know their birth date and maybe even know when they were born, and how the astrology chart sort of was pretty accurate in predicting or at least explaining that person's rise to fame or success or otherwise?
Mm-hmm. Well, how you want to go with Donald Trump?
Sure.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to say, if it wasn't obvious by now, and I've been talking about him for years, but I said everybody was, the minute he got elected, impeached. But his chart showed that nothing of this magnitude was going to happen till starting this last September. And I said, really big time this January, which is exactly what happened. I mean, his aspects, I mean, we can only get away with these things so far before the universe, it's like a rubber band, snaps us back. And this is a very tough year for him. This is not going to be a good year for him at all. But the year he was elected, he had some outrage, and I won't say he was totally elected, because the charts do show of the United States that there was a foreign power that was involved. So, you know, without trying to say, this isn't an issue of Democrat or Republican here. This is just talking about what the charts show. And my even saying that he's going to have a rough year this year, well, it really doesn't take a brain surgeon to see that already. That's what's going on. I'm not positive whether he's winning or not, but I am pretty sure that if he did win, he'd still be removed from office by the end of the year.
Interesting. Very interesting.
And the chart of the United States. Now, you can't predict exact. I'm just seeing some pretty heavy things coming up. If you look at the chart of Election Day, it's a pretty tough chart. we have a Mars retrograde in the sign of Aries, and Mars rules basically is the god of war. And so it can be conflict, it can be the chip on the shoulder, it can be radicalized youth, it can be the military. So it's unusual to have a Mars retrograde on election day. And Mercury, and its retrograde means the planet's going backwards. I know it's not going to be an easy election. I can't predict how it's going to turn out, and that's part of the work I'm doing right now, is trying to figure this out like any good astrologer is. You can't give an absolute prediction on it, but I know that the opponent is being besieged by the other energies of the chart. So my feeling is, even if he did get elected, he doesn't want to leave.
So when you say besieged, but what does that mean?
Their power is kind of like, how would you say it?
Compromised?
It very compromised. The power is compromised because they're surrounded by other planets, other ruling things like Congress and the president. So I'm not positive he's going to win, but I am pretty positive there's still going to be foreign intervention.
Interesting. Well, let's skip away from that and let's talk. And I've just got a few minutes here, but I know you work with crystals, and I've always been fascinated. What is the power when it comes to crystal?
Well, crystals are energy, and they're used in a lot of technology, like refrigerators and computers. Our world, even cars, our world would not be what it is without crystals. So you have these magnificent little bits of minerals and metals that come together, you know, and they're basically started off as stardust. They came from either, you know, comets or meteors that were brought here or that rained upon our planet. These minerals and metals, it's continually raining upon our planets, or there were big collision impacts that allowed these minerals and metals to fall to our newly formed planet. And through time and space, they grew into these beautiful crystals. It's dependent on specifically what the minerals and metals are in the stone, whether they're going to grow up or down, or what kind of point they're going to have, or whether they're going to have a point or not. And so you have these beautiful minerals and metals that form from the richness of the soil, and then you have the plant life that needs the richness of the soil in order to have their certain properties. And so then you have the cow, the pig, the sheep, the fish that need the plant life in order to gain these minerals and metals that help to produce these beautiful crystals. And then you have the human that either eats the cow, the sheep, the pig, or the fish, or they go directly to plant life if they're vegan or vegetarian, that still ate the minerals and metals from the soil that helped to produce these beautiful crystals. So in a long roundabout way, what I'm saying is that we are basically these same minerals and metals, but we have a different housing structure, a different construction for that. And what makes us different is the soul. So when you wear crystals, which I know a lot of people are, it might not make sense to them, but they have an electromagnetic force to them. They have a vibration to them. They have a pulse. And this pulse is read through its oscillations, through its waves. And it's going to complement, the crystal energy will complement the like minerals and metals in our system. So you can wear crystals, and it's very much akin to homeopathy. It works through like, the principle of like. So it's not going to have you jump off tall buildings in a single bound, but it can make your system work better.
Dr. Dawn Silver, thank you so much for joining us. And why don't you give your email address one more time, and we're going to have to take a break.
Thank you, everyone. Dawn Silver, S-I-L-V-E-R, at Ameritech.net.
And if anyone wants some more information about her events upcoming, you can always email me at WGN at AskKarenConti.com. Have a nice night, and we're going to take a break and come back. You're listening to WGN. I'm answering your legal questions right now. The phone lines are wide open. This is your chance to get some free legal advice. I'm going to give you some good guidance. I can't always give you exact legal advice because I don't know all the facts, but give me a shot here. If you have a question about estate planning, if you have a question about something you saw in the news, about lawsuits, medical malpractice, personal injury, family law, that's always a topic that a lot of people have questions about, give me a call here, 312 312- 981-7200 or text to that same number, 312-981-7200. You'll get Ben on the phone and Ben will listen to your question and we'll call it down to a very quick summary of what the question is. And I'll get you on the line and we'll talk. If for some reason you don't want to talk on the radio and you have something that's private, I'm happy to talk to you and try to steer you in the right direction. Let me give you my office number. That is 312-332-7800. Or better yet, email me with your facts. Tell me where you're from, what county you live in, when the event happened, and look basically what you're looking for so I can give you some guidance. I have a lot of links and different documents that I can send your way and references to help you, and so I can usually just email that back to you. That email address is wgn@askkarenconti.com. Karen, K-A-R-E-N, Conti, C-O-N-T-I. A lot of you, I've been talking about getting your legal affairs in order, not just for your death, but basically to have all of your documents in one place. It's very important to do that in case you are ever to become disabled or just in the event you have an insurance claim. It's nice to have everything together in one place. And it's even better to have it all in one place and to scan it into your computer so that you have it online in case something were to happen to your hard file. And I put together a very comprehensive list of things that should go into that file that I can email to you. If you email me at the office, I can quickly send you that document. And I'm happy to do that. It probably will save you some time in the future and maybe save your loved ones some heartache. So, you know, putting together the title of your car and the deed to your house and your mortgage documents and a list of doctors and medicine and insurance policies and Social Security numbers and all of those things. Of course, your estate plan, your will, your trust, and you better have one. If you don't have one, you should have one. And putting that all together in one file, happy to send you that document that summarizes all of those things that should be in one place. And just shoot me an email, wgn@askkarenconti.com. I see the phone lines are lighting up. I'm going to give the number out again, 312-981-7200. Let's go to Rita in McHenry. Hi, Rita. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Tell me about your legal issue.
I'm involved in a replevin action, okay. And I'm pro se.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
And my question is, it's coming up for pretrial on the 14th of this month.
Okay.
And I have submitted exhibits to the opposing attorney.
Okay.
For the trial. Do I also, at this time, submit those exhibits to the judge?
Okay, let me ask you just a quick question, and I'm going to explain to our listeners what you're talking about. Are you a plaintiff or are you a defendant?
Defendant.
Okay. So let me just tell the listeners what a replevin action is. A replevin means to try to get back property. So for instance, if somebody takes your property and is holding it and you believe that you're entitled to it, you file what we call a replevin action, which asks the party to give back the property. And generally speaking, you put in your lawsuit, hey, you know, you have my computer, you have my diamond ring, you have my clothes, and I want it back, and I have a superior right to that property, and you have no right to be holding it. Okay, so that's the definition of replevin. A pretrial is a conference usually held by the judge before the trial starts, and a couple of things might happen at the pretrial depending on the judge. The pretrial might be where the judge tries to settle it, and the judge might listen to the claims and might try to help bring you together in sort of a mediation type of thing. Now, a pretrial could also be that the judge wants to see if you're ready for trial and make sure that all the exhibits are ready, meaning all the documents you're going to use into evidence, that there's a witness list, that there are all of the things ready so that the trial will go smoothly. So, Rita, I assume the judge is trying to get the case ready for trial and wants to see if you have all of your exhibits ready. Is that what you're asking me?
Yes. So, okay. Does he get a copy of the exhibits prior to the pretrial? Because I've already sent the exhibits to the opposing attorney.
Okay. So I think that you should either, again, now I don't have your file, and I don't know the judge, and I don't even know what the local rules are where you are. But generally, you're going to follow the rules of the judge. And usually you should go online and say, but Judge Smith in McHenry County, what are his rules in how to conduct a pretrial? So you're going to be bound to know those rules, even though you're pro se, meaning you don't have a lawyer. So that's the first thing. Maybe there was a court order entered telling you what you had to do, and I would follow that. In the absence of those two things, I would send those to the judge and maybe bring an extra copy to the pretrial along with the list of witnesses you intend to call and about, you know, some thoughts on how long this whole process is going to take. So that's my best advice to you. But remember, I don't have any of the access to this. So, you know, look at your file first, look at the computer second to see, you know, what the rules are, and good luck to you. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Very good.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. I'm going to be taking more of your legal questions. I have Kathy from Mount Prospect, who's up next. 981-7200-312-981-7200. This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN. I'm taking your legal questions here on the Karen Conti Show, 312-981-7200. This week on Chicago's Best, an entire episode dedicated to a side staple, but this time it's the main attraction, my favorite food in the world, Chicago's Best French Fries, Sunday night at 10:30 on WGN TV. Let's go to Kathy in Mount Prospect. Hi, Kathy. Welcome to WGN. You have a legal question.
Hi, Kathy. I was married in 1966. I was married for 20 years, so I was divorced in 1985. I want to know, am I supposed to get Social Security from that, from my ex-husband?
Generally speaking, go ahead. Yes.
I was married for, 19 and a half years.
Yes. Generally speaking, the general rule is that if you are divorced, but that your marriage lasted 10 years or longer, you can receive benefits based upon your ex-spouse's record, but you need to be 62. And so how old are you?
I'm 75.
So you qualify for that. You were married for more than 10 years. And
yes.
Is your ex-spouse now getting Social Security retirement benefits?
Oh, I would imagine.
Okay.
He lives in California.
Okay, so you should be getting benefits. Now, how to go about doing that? You probably want to go down to the Social Security office and sit in that long line and bring...
I did do that, and they said I wasn't entitled to anything, but that was ridiculous. Okay. I mean, it was...
But wait, okay, so what did they say to you? What was the reason that they gave you?
That I wasn't entitled to anything.
Well, but did they must have given you a reason because...
Honestly, she didn't speak English very well, and she looked at all my documents and said no.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, so... That doesn't sound right. I don't know why you're not getting them. There may be some fact that I'm missing here that I don't know about. But what I would do is gather again that, you know, your marriage, your marriage certificate and your divorce decree that specifies the length of the marriage, and your age to make sure they know how old you are. And I would I would go try this again. And if you can't get your Social Security, I will try to give you somebody who can help you with this. Generally speaking, I don't refer people to lawyers because lawyers don't, you know, I hate to say this, but lawyers don't make money on this kind of thing necessarily. So there's not a lot of lawyers out there who will do it because you're going to have to pay them up front, which I know no one wants to do.
Yes.
But try it again and have them, can they put it in writing or cite to something and write it down so you know what the reason is? Because if the reason is incorrect, those people generally know what they're doing. And that's why I'm surprised that they're denying it. Yeah,
I was really surprised too because I thought and she looked at my documents that I had, and said no, I wouldn't get anything.
Okay, well, Kathy, try it again. It's worth the shot. And if not, and in the meantime, why don't you just email me and I'm going to put you on hold and I'm going to give out my email address and I will try to send you a lawyer who might be able to help you in the event that this doesn't work. Okay, thanks for the call, Kathy. Good luck. And that email address is WGN at AskKarenConti.com. That doesn't sound right. It sounds like she should be receiving Social Security based upon those factors that I talked about. All right, let's go to Dave in Chicago. Dave, are we ready for you? Hi, Dave. Welcome to WGN. Oh, maybe we're not ready for you. Anyway, let me give out the number again. 981-7200-312-981-7200. Let's talk a little bit about, let's see, I want to go to, I had a text from Stephanie. Stephanie said that her mother was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer and that she had had, some history of that kind of thing in her family. So she was very diligent about going for her mammograms. And she went religiously. In fact, she went more than every 6 months. She went more frequently. And that there's an idea that perhaps the doctors and the people who looked at the mammogram results did not see the cancer in time. And she wants to know if there is a possible lawsuit. And if so, what should she do to try to determine if there is a lawsuit without spending money on lawyers? Well, the first thing that you should know is that failure to diagnose cancer can be malpractice, and that's just negligence on the part of a doctor or a hospital or a clinic. And that means, did they see something, and should they have seen it, should they have noticed it, and should they have done something to have her come in and get further testing and treat the cancer? Or was this something that maybe popped up very quickly in between the time that she had her last mammogram and the time that it was discovered? So I don't know that, and we don't know that. Only a medical professional can do that. So what you would do is, if you don't know somebody who practices in that area, you can contact me. I don't practice in that area, but I know people who, lawyers who do this kind of work, who are very, very good. That's all they do. They're, in essence, very, you know, knowledgeable, almost to the point where they speak like a doctor. And what they do is, you will get all of your medical records from before, all the mammograms in the past couple of years, and you will get them to the lawyer. And the lawyer will have a doctor who has experience in this kind of thing, of course, and the doctor will review the records and look and see what the mammogram said, and maybe will determine that there should have been a diagnosis, or maybe not. And so in the event that the doctor says, you know, this was malpractice, someone should have seen this on the mammogram, someone should have called her in, there was a miscommunication, there might be a lawsuit. And if there is a lawsuit at that point, you have a choice of whether or not to pursue it. I mean, you can pursue it or not pursue it. But generally speaking, lawyers who do this kind of work charge on a contingent basis. And what that means is that you do not pay anything to the lawyer until and unless there is a settlement or a verdict. And usually the amount that is paid is approximately one third to the lawyer. So in the event that you want to do that, there's generally no upfront charge to do that, because the lawyers who take on these cases have people, doctors in their, basically on retainer to do this kind of work. So so they can do it very cost effectively, so you don't have to pay for it. So if you want me to look into that, or to send you some names of some lawyers in your area, I've got some in DuPage County, some in Cook County, some of the best people, you can give me an email at WGN@AskKarenConti.com. Let's go to Dave, who's ready for the question. Hi, Dave. Welcome to WGN. You have a legal question.
Hi, Karen. Mine is kind of hypothetical and complicated. I'll try to explain it the best I can.
Okay.
Let's say a father of 3 or 4 kids has life insurance for his children, so when he passes away, he has something to give them. It may be annuities, it may be something else. But is it possible that for reasons I'll get into the other half of my question, is it possible for, like, that father who was in a second or third or fourth marriage with the stepmother, is it possible for her to get him to somehow relinquish that life insurance package for his kids and have him sell it to her?
So he's got a policy and the children are the beneficiaries, and he decides he wants to leave it to her instead?
No, let's say is it possible that she could buy the life insurance package for her or her family? Let's say he's deteriorating mentally or, you know, he's got Alzheimer's or dementia, he's deteriorating, and she takes advantage of his deteriorating health. And she wants that life insurance. Is it possible to, like, I should probably ask the insurance industry, but
yes,
does
yeah.
this really happen that no. a person can purchase someone else's, can have them turn over a life insurance package away from their kids and have, like, a stepmother buy that?
Okay. Here's my best answer. First of all, if she is guilty of undue influence, which it sounds like she might be in this hypothetical situation, which means that a person is weakened, this person maybe doesn't have all their willpower, maybe doesn't have all their faculties. I don't know the facts. But if she does that and she convinces him to do something he wouldn't have otherwise done, that's undue influence, and that is against the law, and that can be rectified with a lawsuit. That said, my understanding is life insurance has nothing to do with the estate. Life insurance survives and is outside the will and the trust, okay? So whatever is on the whatever is in the policy, the beneficiaries, the insurance company can do nothing except give the money to the beneficiaries. So if there's a sale of a, there's no such, I don't know that there's such a thing as selling the policy to somebody else unless it changes the beneficiaries. That doesn't sound right to me. Again, maybe we're talking about definitions that are slightly different. Why don't you do this? I've got a really good guy who's very knowledgeable about insurance matters, and perhaps he can answer that. And maybe you have a hypothetical issue. Maybe you have some more concrete facts you would like to share with him so that you can get the answers that you want. But my understanding is the insurance company is bound by the beneficiaries and by who's on that policy. And there's just, you know, no way that they would pay to anybody else.
Let me be more specific, maybe. Let's say the father, for whatever reasons, he may be a good father or bad father, he cashes that life insurance policy in. Before his time comes.
Okay.
And then the money probably goes to her, or she somehow influenced him into doing that.
Okay. I'm going to answer quickly because I want to get to one other call before the thing. Okay. I'm going to put you on hold. Now, if he cashed in the policy, and so it was a whole life policy, so it has value. It's not a term policy. Term is just if you die, the money goes. If it's a whole life policy or that type of policy that has value, intrinsic value, he can cash it out. The question is, did she force him to do it? And you would have to prove that he was not in his right mind, that she exerted undue influence, and she did it to basically take the money away from the children, and that can maybe be undone. But again, that's very difficult because you would have to prove with medical evidence that he did not know what he was doing at the time. Let's go to Nicole in Palos. Hi, Nicole. We only have a few minutes, so give me your question as quickly as possible. Hi, Nicole. Hello. Okay, Nicole. All right, I'm going to put you on hold. Looks like the question was previously assaulted, didn't want to press charges at the time. Can I file charges now? I'd have to know a little bit more about the facts, but generally speaking, if something happens to you where there is an assault or domestic violence or something like that, your best bet is to report it immediately because the police officers and the prosecutors, you know, want to bring someone to justice right away. If you wait a month or 2 months, there's going to be the question. Hey, listen to what we're watching with the Harvey Weinstein trial, right? They're saying to the women on the stand, why did you wait? Why didn't you report this to the police? Why didn't you tell someone about this right away? Why did you wait 10 years to bring these charges? So that is going to be a very important piece of prosecuting someone. So if you wait, it's not to say that there might be a statute of limitation that is run. It could be that you could still bring the charges, but the prosecutors aren't going to want to do it unless you bring them on a very timely basis just because of the difficulty in the proof. We're going to be taking more of your legal questions, 312-981-7200. This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN. I'm taking your legal questions at 312-981-7200 or text to 312-981-7200. At about quarter till the hour, I'm going to be doing my weekly news quiz. Why don't you give me a call here and you'll call in, get the second caller to call in, and you can play my game. So hopefully you can be successful if you read the news, or even if you don't, it's fun. We have a lot of fun with some of the questions. 312-981-7200. I have a text that says that my nephew's wife died suddenly. They were separated, but not legally. In going through their house, he found she had taken out a lot of payday loans and personal loans. Is he responsible for paying them? Okay, so if they were separated, they're still married. So there's no, you know, unless they went to court to get a legal separation, they were still married. So that means he's still the husband. So the question is, are you responsible for your spouse's debts? This is a very good question, and it's one of great concern, because a lot of people who separate maybe don't keep track of what their spouse is doing, and the other spouse, maybe that's the reason you separated, because you don't like the fact that they are overspending, or gambling, or using drugs, or whatever the vice is. So the question is, are you responsible for the spouse's bills? And the answer could be yes, depending upon if it was related to family expenditures. Okay, so this is complicated, but let's just say the nephew and the wife have assets together, that there might be a house, or maybe there's a bank account. In the event that she owes money, those creditors need to be paid before any of the money goes to the nephew. Because as the spouse, if she doesn't have a will, let's assume she doesn't have a will, maybe she does have a will, but the will will tell everybody, the world, where the money will go. But if there is no will, then it goes to the spouse. So this, and there, if there's children, there's going to be issues there too. But all of those creditors are going to be paid before any of the assets are distributed. So in one way, you may not be responsible for those debts. But on the other hand, before anybody gets money, those debts have to be paid from the estate. So hopefully that makes sense. And it may be you need to get a lawyer to look into this to make sure you do this the right way, because you don't want to distribute any assets that she might have had, and then later have the creditors come knocking on your door looking for the money, in which case it's going to be too late to kind of get that resolved. So if you want me to refer you a lawyer who can help you straighten out that situation, you can always give me a call at 312-332-7800 or WGN at AskKarenConti.com. Give me a call here. The phone lines are wide open. I had another email this week from Tracy. It's another case regarding malpractice. And she was talking about how her father was in the hospital with pain in his back. He went back several times. He went to different doctors. And finally, after almost 2 years, someone finally said, "You have a tumor on your spine." And fortunately, he was okay. They removed the tumor. It was benign. But the question is, can I sue all the doctors who failed to recognize that there was a tumor? Can I sue all these people because he was in a lot of pain for 2 years? So that's a good question. Now, if they were wrong in not diagnosing it, I'm not saying they were right, but let's just say that they were wrong. There has to be some serious damage before a lawyer generally brings a lawsuit for medical malpractice. It's very expensive for the lawyer to fund these cases because they have to hire sometimes one or two medical experts who are charging huge amounts of money, sometimes $1,000, $2,000 an hour, to review records and to be witnesses. So before you start spending $50,000 on expenses in a case and maybe litigate it for 3 years, a lawyer wants to know that there is going to be a significant amount of damage that you're going to ask that jury for. And I'm not saying that pain isn't a bad thing, and you know, and that your father deserved to have that pain. I'm saying that unless there was some permanent damage that caused medical losses and maybe lost wages and substantial amount of money out of pocket, the lawyers are probably not going to take it, even if there was malpractice. But again, you should talk to a malpractice attorney who concentrates his or her practice in that area. If you need somebody to reference, I'm happy to give you some people to call and contact, and they can listen to your issue and maybe get somebody involved to see if there's enough damage to warrant a lawsuit. Again, WGN at AskKarenConti.com. I'm still taking your legal calls, 312-981-7200. Ben, are we ready? Yes, is that we're ready for Jen? I think it's Jen. Hi, Jen. Welcome to WGN. You have a legal question.
Yes, Karen. It was similar to a lady who talked to you about three calls before, but she didn't state this, and so I don't know. So I'm asking for myself now. I was married almost 30 years when we divorced. He remarried, and he's been married. He didn't remarry immediately. He's probably been married about 15 or 16 years now. Being that I was married to him for nearly 30 years, would I be the one who could, in fact, if his Social Security was more than mine, get those benefits, or does the wife now get them?
You should be able to get them, and I don't know exactly, okay, Jen, how they calculate them, but they have a way to do it, and they base it upon the years that you were married to him. So, you know, those statements,
right,
that you get occasionally from Social Security that will tell you, in this year,
right,
you made this much, you know, right?
I sure do.
Okay, so they have that, obviously, in their computers, and so they will actually look at the amount of money that he earned during the time that you were married to him, and based upon some formula that I'm not aware of how they do it, but they will calculate what is owed. I mean, what portion of that you're entitled to. So again, I don't know how they do it, and it's probably a good idea to maybe even go down, like I said to the other lady,
yeah,
to go,
right,
down there, have all your information, your divorce, mm-hmm, decree, your marriage,
right,
all of that stuff, and be able to sit and talk to somebody. And, you know, sometimes bring someone with you, because, you know, a lot of people get nervous when they go and they do these things, and sometimes it's helpful to have a companion come with you that can ask questions that you might forget to ask, or come, at, mm-hmm, least come prepared with the questions, because the other lady, unfortunately, she didn't get an answer why. I mean, she's asking me,
right,
why,
right,
and she was sitting next to the person who was supposed to tell her, and she didn't,
yeah,
know, and I'm not blaming her. I'm just saying, you know, you've got to make sure when you walk out of there, you fully understand the whole scenario.
Well, of course.
Okay?
Well, let me get this clear. Are you saying the current person would get so much of it, and I would get so much of it, or am I misunderstanding according to these calculations?
Yeah, I believe both of them would, but she would have to be married to him for 10 years in order for...
Well, I said she has been married to him for about 16,
yeah,
would be
so
my guess, and I was married almost 30 years. So
again, I don't know how it's calculated, but my understanding,
no,
is that both of you would be entitled, yeah, to something. And
Some of it.
So good luck,
okay,
to you, all right? Good luck.
All right. Well, thank you for your help, and I enjoy your show.
Thank you so much, Jen. Take care.
Sure.
All,
bye,
right. Let's go to Robert in Mount Prospect. Hi, Robert. Welcome to WGN.
Hi.
What is your legal question?
Hi.
I'll
be 65 in a couple of weeks, and I can collect a pension. But I've had this part-time job in the automobile industry for the last... since 2012, and I went to a couple of months ago. I went to the union hall, and they tell me that I have to quit the job to get the pension. And I've been looking for another job since June with no luck. Is there any way I keep my job and collect the pension? Is there a way out of that?
So I'm just curious: is the job that you have now union related to the pension that you are ready to receive?
Yes.
Okay, so you're still working for the union.
Yeah, but I'm not in the union. I'm 100% vested in the union.
Okay, so they're telling you that in order to get your pension, you cannot be working for the union. Is that what you're saying?
Right. I can't work anything automotive.
Okay. Now, I don't know the answer to this because I don't know what your collective bargaining agreement says, and that's going to dictate everything, okay?
I assume that
you went to HR, and I assume you went to the pension people and you talked to them and they showed you the documentation that dictates this, because you should know exactly what the rules are, and someone should be able to pull out the paperwork to say you don't get your pension if you're still working automotive in the union. You know, you should look at that, because I'm hoping they're right, and generally speaking, they're right, because they, you know, that's their job, is to tell you what the situation is. But in the event that they're wrong, you're going to want to know that. And again, pensions are different. So what I'm the advice that I'm telling you, or that what they told you, and I don't want listeners to think that that applies to pensions all over, because every pension has different rules, and some pensions allow you to continue to work different places, and so you should really know those rules as best you can. So if you want to send me an email, I might be able to hook you up. I would say before you even contact me, go back to that pension and have them pull out the documentation that explains exactly why they're telling you that you can no longer work for this company. Okay.
Okay.
That makes better sense to me, so that you know for sure. And then you can make your choice. You can either continue to work and not get your pension, or perhaps, obviously, you know, find another job that where you can get your pension and still work, because it sounds like you still want to work and still want to make money, and good for you.
Yeah, I'm not going to check my Social Security yet.
Yeah. Okay, well, good. All right, Robert, good luck to you. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
All right. I want to talk just briefly. I practice in the area of family law, and a lot of people who are considering a divorce hesitate to get divorced. And I understand why, because you want to make sure that the marriage has ended. But one of the things I always want to tell people is, if you've decided that your marriage is over, if there's domestic violence, if there are issues that cannot be solved, if you've gone to counseling, if you've been separated for years, you need to get a divorce. And here's why. I just had a situation where a couple was married for a long time but separated. And unfortunately, one of the parties became very ill. And now the other spouse is tasked with taking care of that spouse, even though they haven't really lived together for years and years and years. And again, till death do us part, all of that. But if you have a spouse out there spending money, maybe running up bills, maybe getting sick, maybe doing all kinds of things, you could possibly be held responsible for that, those damages or those losses, and/or responsible for supporting that person. So it's very, very important for you to take care of that. I want to say there's a seminar called put on by Private Vista. It's about divorce. If you're looking for information about divorce, it's on March 7th. It's out in Oak Brook. I'm going to be speaking at it. There's going to be financial people and psychological people. Private Vista, just Google it and you will see that seminar. And I highly suggest that you sign up and go to it. Or if you want to email me, I can send you the information. WGN@AskKarenConti.com. And when we come back, we're going to play my legal quiz, my news quiz. The second caller to WGN, 312-981-7200, will be the contestant, the one and only contestant on the Karen Conti Show. There is a texter who asked, what would you think if a person went to Indiana to file pro se for a judgment from Illinois and the clerk said you can't file pro se, you need a lawyer? Not sure I quite understand that. First of all, pro se means without a lawyer. So if you ever hear that phrase, it's kind of a Latinish phrase for meaning you go without a lawyer. So what would you say if a person went to Indiana to file a pro se judgment from Illinois and the clerk said you need a lawyer? Well, generally speaking, you don't need a lawyer to file anything. You can represent yourself in a criminal case. You can represent yourself in almost any case. It could be that if you are a corporation, you must have an attorney, because there's some rules in some courts that say that if you're representing a corporation, you have to be represented by counsel. But I have to know more facts before I would venture an answer on that one. And if you want to send me an email, a texter, I'm happy to answer that. Maybe you can give me some more facts exactly what you mean. WGN@AskKarenConti.com. Ben, I think Ben needs some free legal advice. You were kind of waving your arms saying you might have a legal question.
Yeah, since everybody is enthralled with the Super Bowl tonight.
Yes.
I was wondering if I had been able to watch the Super Bowl and I decided to have a party, what would I be liable for at that party? Like, let's say somebody breaks something in my home, somebody gets hurt, tries to jump over the bonfire that we're having as we tailgate. Or...
are we talking about Rick Hogan? Because that sounds something like he would do all of those things.
He's very limber. I've seen him in action.
Jack be nimble, Rick be quick. No, that's a good question. So your homeowner's insurance or your renter's insurance, hopefully you have renter's insurance, would cover if somebody damaged your property, like they damaged something in your property. Now, it'd have to be worth it for you to make the claim, because always there's a deductible that you have to deal with. If so, somebody got hurt on your property because they were, you know, reaching for the seven-layer dip, having had too many beers, and broke their leg on the coffee table, then the, and let's just say that they wanted to bring a lawsuit against you and wanted to make a claim that your house was somehow unsafe or presented an unsafe condition, then your homeowner's insurance would provide a lawyer for the defense and would pay for any settlement or any verdict that happened. So they, you would be covered on that other than your deductible. So that's good. Driving home is interesting. Yes, your homeowner's insurance would cover a lawsuit, but generally speaking, and this is not a moral statement, this is a legal statement, you are not responsible for people driving home who are adults. So if someone overserves and goes out and hurts themselves or others, you generally aren't responsible. You're not a bar, which has dram shop coverage for that. And adults are tasked with basically following the rules and making sure they're not drunk when they get in the car. Now, if you dangle keys and say, hey, you can use my car after you had seven margaritas, then you might be on the line for some sort of negligent entrustment. Again, that doesn't mean you should, you know, booze people up and push them out the door and make them drive. In fact, you should be hiding their keys and calling an Uber for them. But this is different for children, anyone under 18, even if they drink alcohol at your party and you didn't sanction it, you didn't tell them to do it, you didn't allow them to do it, but they snuck it, you might be responsible for something that happens to them or to others when they leave. And that's from a civil standpoint, meaning money damages, but it could also be criminal liability as well. We had one in Illinois where the parents were held criminally responsible, even though they told the kids not to drink at the party. So there you go. Super Bowl party 101. So let's go to our quiz. Again, let me just give out my information in case you didn't get on the phone and get your questions answered. 312-332-7800 or WGN at AskKarenConti.com. We have a contestant, and our contestant is Peggy from Rochelle. Hi, Peggy.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good.
Are you ready for the quiz?
Well, I'm going to try my best. The last couple times I knew some of the answers, and I wished I would have called you, so I hope I'll have good thinking.
Okay. Are you a big news junkie, or are you kind of stay away from all this stuff that's going on?
Well, I listen to it some. My memory isn't always real great, but, you know.
Well, we have multiple choice for that. So here we go. All right. Let's start with this. Uber is experimenting with a program in California that allows certain drivers to do what? A, deliver pizza at the same time they're driving passengers. B, set their own prices. C, sell pretzels and peanuts to riders. Or D, bring dogs and cats along for riders to pet.
Oh, boy, I don't know.
Uber is experimenting with a program in California. What are they allowing their drivers to do? Pizza, setting prices, feeding them pretzels and peanuts, or bringing their dogs and cats? Which one?
D.
That is incorrect. It is setting their own prices. And I don't know how that's going to work. I mean, are you?
I don't either.
Are you an Uber rider?
No, I'm not. I'm blind, and I get around by family and friends, but I do quite well for myself.
Good for you. Good for you. I'm not a big Uber person either. I'm mostly a person who takes cabs, but I don't know how they would set that and how that would be.
I've taken cabs in the past, though.
So let's go to this. This is an interesting situation. There were a bunch of news stories about American Airlines this week. Which American Airlines story is not true? Okay, all of them are true except one, and you have to pick out the one that's not true. A, American Airlines removed a man for wearing a gas mask on a flight. B, a couple sued American Airlines saying they were kicked off the flight for being Jewish and they were told that it was because of body odor. C, a man in a Chicago-bound flight charged the cockpit yelling, "God is real," forcing the plane to land in Jacksonville. Or D, a woman was arrested for refusing to get off the flight with her anatomically correct naked stuffed husband doll.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I'll answer that one. Oh.
Gas mask. They were kicked off because of body odor. Charging the cockpit, yelling, "God is real." Or refusing to get rid of the anatomically correct husband doll.
B.
That is incorrect. It is the anatomically correct husband doll. All of those other three were true. A man apparently was on the American Airlines flight. He was wearing one of those full gas masks. I assume he's doing that because of the coronavirus, but he wouldn't take it off, and so they had to remove him. And then, yes, the couple did sue, saying that they were kicked off, saying that they had body odor. And, and again, the Chicago-bound flight from Miami, someone charged the cockpit. He was probably mentally ill and was asked to leave, and they had to land the plane. Okay, you're not doing so well, but you can redeem yourself. All right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I hope.
You can redeem yourself. But we're having fun, and that's the most
important thing.
But yes, good. All right, here we go. In Las Vegas, a security guard became involved with a brawl with, which is true, a couple dressed as Mickey and Minnie Mouse, B, a group of five female impersonators on a smoking break, C, a Dartmouth professor who studies violence against law enforcement, or D, an Elvis impersonator.
And which one won?
So in Las Vegas, a security guard became involved in a brawl with Mickey and Minnie Mouse, dressed up as Minnie and Mickey Mouse, female impersonators on a smoke break, or a professor who studies law enforcement, or an Elvis impersonator.
A.
That is true. A couple was dressed as Mickey and Minnie Mouse. They're on the strip. The security guard said, you know, Minnie, you got to move over because you're blocking something. So they got into a brawl. Well, Mickey tried to help, and I guess there was a Pluto, too, and there was a brawl. So
I think I remember that one now that I answered it.
Yeah, and apparently, you know, I haven't been to Las Vegas in a while, but apparently there are a lot of people on the strip in costume, and they have pictures taken with them and probably make some money doing it. So this was quite the Disney episode. All right, here we go. Elementary school students in Rock Island, Illinois, celebrated their 100th day in school by doing what? A, raising $100 each for the school's music program. B, staying silent for 100 minutes. C, dressing up like they were 100 years old. Or D, writing 100 times, I love my school.
Raising the money.
It is dressing up like they're 100 years old. Peggy, thank you for playing. You didn't do so well, but...
I got 2 and 2.
You did 2 and 2? Okay, one really quick. Chicago, City of Chicago, this was on our newscast, sued the coffee shop this week. Okay, City of Chicago sued the coffee shop because it was serving caffeinated labeled as decaf. B, it was serving dogs in water cans. Or C, for trademark infringement for the Chicago Fire Department logo. Or D, refusing to serve a mom with emotional support rabbit named Lulu.
D.
It is because of trademark infringement for the Chicago Fire Department logo. Peggy, thanks you so much for joining us. And hopefully you tune in next time. And maybe if your news is a little bit better, we'll do a little bit better. But you did great.
I hope so, too, because I'm disappointed.
But that's okay.
The last couple times I knew about every question, but
thank
you,
you
never know.
Thank you, Peggy, and good luck to you. Take care.
Thank you.
This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN.